We will now call the next case, which is Ronald Taft Davis III versus the Commonwealth. Mr. Cosby and Mr. Murphy. Yes, sir. How are you today?
Fine, Your Honor. It's good to be here.
Do you want any time in rebuttal?
About 5 minutes, Judge. Okay. I have the privilege to represent Mr. Davis in the trial court as well as in the circuit court of Surrey County. And rarely do I think the courts in Virginia are put in the position to have to make this type of decision on collateral estoppel, whether it's in a circuit court or an appellate court. Because when I travel around the Commonwealth and I've appeared in numerous courts, generally when the misdemeanor is intertwined with the felony at the preliminary hearing, invariably the Commonwealth attorney, knowing Lee and having been to seminars, will now cross that.
Can I ask you this, Mr. Cosby? Is this a fair statement? Double jeopardy bars being tried twice for the same offense?
You guess.
Okay. Double jeopardy bars being tried twice for the same offense. Well, the General District Court had no jurisdiction to try the felony case. The man was not tried. There was no trial.
Understand.
So why is collateral estoppel even on the table?
Collateral estoppel is on the table because once a court of competent jurisdiction
tries a defendant for the same offense, this was not a trial. The court had no jurisdiction.
I think if collateral estoppel did not exist, that would be correct. I would disagree with the court respectfully.
But collateral estoppel requires a final judgment on the merits by a court with jurisdiction to try the offense.
Well, the
not to send it on to a grand jury, but to try it. Right.
But are we looking at the misdemeanor as the collateral estoppel element, or the felony that was?
We're looking at the misdemeanor.
Did where the trial court have jurisdiction to try the reckless handling of the firearm charge?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. It had the jurisdiction, and
the submission involved was involved in the felony, the identity of
criminal agents. That's correct, Your Honor. So
we're looking then at the fact-finding only of the misdemeanor charge, as was the case in Lee, but not the fact-finding vis-a-vis the felony charges.
That's correct.
All right, so don't let me put words in your mouth, Mr. Cosby. The fact-finding vis-a-vis not certifying the felony charges in the General District Court, is that not part of the predicate of your collateral estoppel argument?
I really don't. Well, it's intertwined in the sense that when we look at how the judge ruled and we look at the context in which he ruled, it's intertwined, but it's not, it doesn't go to the issue of whether double jeopardy applies. It goes to the issue of how we look at.
But your whole position is, since in the felony preliminary hearing, the trial court found that evidence didn't prove the defendant was the shooter.
That's correct.
He didn't make that specific finding in the misdemeanor, but your argument is it's clear that he found in dismissing the misdemeanor that the defendant wasn't the shooter, even though he didn't articulate that.
That's correct.
And in Lee versus Commonwealth, the district court clearly did not have jurisdiction to try the manslaughter case, but its finding that in the drunk driving charge that Lee was not the driver of the car created a collateral estoppel issue later on the manslaughter charge. Would that be a fair statement?
That's correct. That was the majority's opinion, and that's what I think the law is, and that's what I think this court should follow.
What significance do you give to the fact that in that case there was a stipulation as to the factual determination that underlied the determination of the case?
Well, obviously that was better for the defense in their argument, but I think we have to look at the context of this to reach a conclusion as to what was decided by the General District Court judge. So I think there's basically two ways to look at this case.
Following up on the last two questions, is it your position then that the collateral estoppel issue here is the fact preclusion? In other words, because Judge Zepkin in deciding the misdemeanor that was clearly within the district court's jurisdiction to decide, factually concluded as the fact finder that there was no proof of criminal agency, and that was the very same issue later adjudicated in the circuit court, that the collateral estoppel principles are what prevent the Commonwealth from attempting to prove that having already failed to do so in the earlier proceeding. Is that basically your position?
That's basically my position. And I think basically in looking at the majority opinion and looking at the dissent, they're two diametrically opposed in a way to look at this. One is going to look at the context of the court's ruling, and the dissent says it has to have a because.
Well, what no, case law, Mr. Cosby, were you able to find that you could share with us that says if you make a statement as to the matter, the general district court judge makes a statement as to the matter over which he does not have the final authority, and then he moves and says, and now on the misdemeanor charge, and he just finds him not guilty but doesn't give a reason, what case law allows that reason for the felony and on the issue of probable cause to be transferred over to the misdemeanor where he does have final authority?
Well, I think really it's what the majority opinions said. I would agree with the majority opinion and rely on it. And they quoted Ash versus Swenson, a U.S. Supreme Court case that requires with collateral estoppel that a given case be approached with realism and rationality, and a court is required to examine the record of a prior proceeding and look at, you know, it's the evidence. So when I was in graduate school on English, we just didn't look at Alexander Pope's a couple of sentences. We looked at the entire poem to get the context in which,
but
and I think that's a parallel here. It's a parallel
probably also
here.
Looked at the dozens of cases we have where lower court judges in bench trials and trial juries render inconsistent verdicts on a not infrequent basis. So what we have is, and tell me if I'm misunderstanding what you're saying, is you do concede that the specific fact finding was limited to the misdemeanor. Sorry?
I agree that
there's no specific fact finding with respect to the felonies over which he had no jurisdiction to try in any of that. Is that fair?
Well,
so far?
I think there was a fact finding, but it's a preliminary hearing. I mean, he found that there was no probable cause to believe that the defendant was a criminal agent.
Right, but we have to infer that the reason he found that was exactly the same reason he gave for the misdemeanor. Now, that may be a fair inference. That may be a reasonable inference. But it's an inference. And collateral estoppel is very jealously guarded, particularly in the criminal context. In fact, Ash is the lead cite for that very proposition. We don't apply collateral estoppel unless basically we figure there's no other way to look at this. There's no rational way to examine this fact pattern without coming to this conclusion. And yet, there are several options the trial court could have relied upon to not certify the felonies, in addition to the absence of criminal agency.
I understand the court's position, but I respectfully would disagree in this particular fact pattern because...
Well, in Simon and Lee, don't we have different situations? Because in Lee, we've got a stipulation.
Yes.
And in Simon, you have a transcript which shows that defense counsel makes a specific motion on the ultimate fact and issue. Whereas here, it's almost like an afterthought in a way, although, you know, because everybody's arguing about the big issues, of course, very understandable. But then on page 505 of the joint appendix, counsel then says, and we would request a dismissal of the reckless endangerment misdemeanor indictment because the Commonwealth has not met its evidence on that matter as well. There's no because of this or because of that.
Right. I think that's what the court has to decide is because needed.
Prior to that portion of the transcript, didn't you say there hasn't been any linkage of criminal agency with that of Mr. Ronald Davis? And we request dismissal of the felony indictments, and we would request a dismissal of the reckless endangerment because the Commonwealth has not met its burden on that matter as well.
That was stated by, I mean, there was a public defender in the lower court.
I'm sorry.
Was retained for the circuit court. But that was clearly stated. So the question, I think, is...
That's clearly stated by the lawyer. It's not clearly stated by the fact finder, which is the only thing we're concerned
about. Well, Judge Zepkin followed, his response to that was basically something along the lines of, I'm going from memory here, but... that the Commonwealth failed to prove that Davis was the one who fired the weapon, or words to that effect. Isn't that what the judge Zepkin said?
That's what he found. So,
Mr. Cosby, let me just stop you and say
yes,
the clock is sort of working backwards. You're in your rebuttal time now, and you have about 4 minutes and a half left. If you want to continue arguing, please do so.
I'll stand aside and let the Attorney General comes.
Thank you, Mr. Cosby.
Mr. Murphy? Or Gene Murphy from the Commonwealth.
Mr. Murphy, let me just follow up on the question I asked Mr. Cosby at the Commonwealth, if I can. Hypothetically, for the purpose of my question, let's assume we're in circuit court on two different proceedings. And in an earlier misdemeanor proceeding, the fact finder says on the record, the Commonwealth failed to prove that he ever fired the gun. And that's an essential, that's an element of the later proceeding. Would collateral estoppel principles apply in that circumstance?
Prevent
the problem? Why does it matter that we're in two different levels of court here?
Well, the difference here is that, of course, we have two different kinds of proceedings intermingled. And we have the felony proceedings, which will not result in a final judgment. And what the court says about those proceedings cannot be...
Except it was a unitary hearing, but it was also a trial on a separate but related charge. And so I'm trying to understand analytically why it makes any difference in terms of applying collateral estoppel principles if we have identical facts, but for the fact that we have isn't collateral estoppel applicable when you have two separate trials involving the same parties and previously adjudicated factual issues that have been adjudicated against the Commonwealth?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I think that we could have had collateral estoppel here if, in fact, the judge had made findings with respect to criminal agency.
I think I asked you this question at the panel. It's your position, I understand, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I understood you to say that if the judge has said, as to whether you've shown reasonable to believe that Mr. Davis was alone to find the weapon, I find you have not met that burden. If he had then said, and for the same reason, I find him not guilty of the misdemeanor, you would agree that collateral estoppel then would apply.
Yes, yeah, sure, I believe it would.
So your argument is that there could have been some other basis for the acquittal of the misdemeanor.
Yes, Sean.
Can you point to me any portion of the general district transcript that supports the argument that his verdict was based on anything other than the identity of the gunman?
Yes, Sean. I think we can, because first of all, don't forget, the judge made two findings with respect to the felony. The first thing he determined was that the Commonwealth had established that a murder had been committed. He then proceeded to the issue of agency. If he followed the same procedure with respect to the misdemeanor, he would first determine there was no...
Well, can you point to any evidence, any argument, or any specific statement by the trial judge that would lead you to believe that that verdict was based on anything other than identity?
I can point to
the
record.
Let me interrupt or follow through on that. The whole defense position at trial was he wasn't the shooter, right?
We know that with respect to the felony. We don't know what the defense would have been if the Commonwealth had actually put on any evidence of reckless handling of a firearm. Well, we have a situation where that crime was never discussed.
Well, do we know that there was an argument that there was no evidence that there was that he recklessly handled the gun?
Yes, sure, absolutely. There was no evidence whatsoever of reckless conduct in this case.
Now, was that argued to the district court judge?
No, it wasn't, Your Honor. But I mean, the judge, of course, had the obligation to review the law and to deal with that question.
Who has the burden of persuasion to establish the predicate fact-finding and the predicate specificity for purposes of applying the collateral estoppel?
Yes, Your Honor.
Who has the burden of persuasion of establishing?
The defendant. I think the defendant has to prove that the decision could not have been grounded on any other issue.
In terms of standard of review, whose decision is it whether there's a reasonable inference that the district court judge also found that he wasn't the shooter in the misdemeanor case?
Well, I guess the first would be the circuit court judge, and then your issue was whether the circuit court judge was reasonable in his determination that there was a possible other.
Double jeopardy and collateral estoppel or de novo review, are we not?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Murphy, for me, and the struggle that I had in this case is that
It seems to me from looking at this record that the Commonwealth made an election, and it struck me as I'm reading this record that the simple way for us to have not have to involve ourselves with any of this is if the Commonwealth had made a decision at the General District Court to null pros the misdemeanor and the direct indict him along with the other felonies when he went up to circuit court, as opposed to running the risk of having this, what we may argue is an inconsistent factual determination now as he's being charged and convicted in the circuit court. And there are cases out there that say that when the Commonwealth makes that kind of election, they withstand the consequences of that election. What would be the response?
Well, that's certainly true. The Commonwealth should have done something different. The question here is, having done what it should not have done here, did it in fact result in collateral estoppel? And it seems to me that if you look at the transfer, what you see is evidence of an intentional murder. That is inconsistent with any claim that this was, in fact, reckless handling of a firearm. The court looks at that and says, Mr. Poindexter, you haven't shown anything.
But if we assume for the sake of argument that we're dealing with a general verdict on the misdemeanor charge, isn't it incumbent upon us to go back and look at the overall context, all the comments that were made in that hearing, in order to determine whether or not collateral estoppel bars?
Absolutely. And I think if you look at that, what you see is total unconcerned about the reckless handling. Nobody discussed it. Nobody offered any evidence of it. It seems to me that the judge, they're not serious about this offense. There is no reckless.
If the trial judge, or a jury, a trial judge for that matter, makes a factual finding that the defendant didn't handle the firearm, they never get to the question of whether the handling was reckless or not, because it doesn't matter.
Right, but we don't have that factual finding here because we don't have a final judgment, a final decision on the felony.
Except what we do have, though, is a final decision on the misdemeanor and a contemporaneous statement by the fact finder that says the Commonwealth failed to show that, quote, he was the one who fired the weapon. Now, and that was the only, and identity was the only issue in both cases, the preliminary hearing, the preliminary hearing situation and the trial on the misdemeanor.
No, you're
right. So, I mean, I guess if that's a factual conclusion that's reached by the fact finder, while it's not final as to the felony, clearly, it is certainly final as to the extent it's relevant to the misdemeanor charge.
If the defendant can show that there was no other possibility, but there was another issue in the reckless handling, some evidence that there was reckless conduct
and
involved.
And Tim Johnson, the only witness at the preliminary hearing that was actually there when the shooting occurred that had no bias one way or the other, testified when asked, not only did he see the shooter do it, and the shooter was in black, but he asked him how he shot, and he said he held his arm out. Which
absolutely
seems hardly reckless, does it?
Right. There's absolutely no evidence of reckless conduct. The police said there were numerous shots fired into the back of the car. This man fired the gun. It was 10 to 15 feet from
him. So the question is not whether it's probable the general district court judge took his fact-finding in one part of the case and attributed it to another, whether it's even likely, whether it's reasonable to infer, but rather whether it was necessarily implicit.
Yeah,
there's
no other
way to come to this conclusion.
Well, let me follow up on that, Mr. Murphy.
Yeah, is that your
opinion? Yeah, sure, and I think this court said in Rice that it had to be essential, that finding was essential.
And that's correct, and let me follow up on that if I can. So if that's true, then why would it be necessary, let's forget the felony for a moment, in terms of the reckless handling of firearm, there's two elements, possession of the firearm and handling it recklessly. Agreed so far? If the trial court says the Commonwealth presents no evidence that he ever fired the weapon, that's a factual finding, then it seems to me implicitly a trial court would never need to reach the next element, which is the recklessness issue. Having concluded that there's no possession involved, then that's the end of the analysis, wouldn't it be?
Well, the easiest thing for the judge to do in this case is to reach the first issue. He sat there, he's heard no evidence, so he says...
So he should have said it. By the way, on that reckless handling charge, I know I found that you didn't handle a firearm, but even if you did handle a firearm, it was reckless?
What I'm saying is that
it was not reckless.
That in the judge's determination whether he's going to put him on this offense, the first thing he's probably looking at is where's the evidence of recklessness.
Isn't the bottom line here, for there to be double jeopardy, we have to imply something or infer it?
Yeah.
And the law is that we don't infer. We don't make implied findings. It's got to be express and specific, because collateral estoppel is a very jealously guarded doctrine. Its recognition in criminal law was actually a bit of a concession. So if it requires us to infer something from the context, from the remarks, from the lawyer's arguments, then we're already in the wrong zone of decision making. It's got to be specific and necessary, logically necessary.
I think that you have to remember that Ash is clear that that was the only issue possible or available was identity.
Wait a minute, but Ash requires that we examine the record of a prior proceeding, taking into account the pleadings, the evidence, the charge, and the other relevant matter. So we can infer, because if we take those things into account, we must infer.
But if you look at what we have is two separate proceedings tied together. But what is the evidence on the misdemeanor? What is the argument on the misdemeanor? There is none.
Listen to me there, Mr. Murphy. Typically, we don't have separate proceedings when there's a companion felony and misdemeanor.
Yes, sir.
There's one presentation of evidence, and the fact finder, the district court judge, has to act as the ultimate fact finder with respect to the misdemeanor charge, which is within their jurisdiction, and simply apply a probable cause analysis to the rest of it. They don't typically bifurcate the evidence and say, this fact was proven as to this offense, but not to the other. They'll make credibility findings, for example, and say, I don't believe you, therefore, that element is not satisfied. That would go to both the preliminary hearing issues and the trial issues. It's just that there's constitutional consequences when it applies to the trial issues, because that's the court of competent jurisdiction for that.
Well, I think we have to bifurcate when we get to the decision stage. That's what we're talking about here, not what the evidence was.
Why is this really conceptually any different from the cases that talk about the differential verdicts, the inconsistent verdicts, coming out of exactly the same fact finder, involving exactly the same factual conclusions, where one charge is acquitted on a fact basis, but the other charge is not? It would be reasonable to infer that, wow, if the reason for the acquitting the first charge is really true, then they would probably want to acquit him on the second charge. But we always say, but wait a minute, that's not necessarily true, because decision makers do make inconsistent verdicts, and it is rational, and it is possible there was some other reason for that. Isn't that really the same concept that we're thinking about here?
I think it is, and I think that's what the courts are saying when they say you have to prove the necessity, the essentiality.
But collateral estoppel doesn't apply in a concurrent prosecution, as Judge Kelsey is talking about. This is clearly a subsequent prosecution, is it not?
When you look at...
Question one.
What I'm saying is here, with respect to this determination of what this general verdict on the misdemeanor means, you can't rely upon other...
You call it a general verdict, but it's a unique general verdict in that it includes a specific factual finding.
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. I mean, the verdict on the misdemeanor is merely that I would find that you have not proved guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
Fair.
I mean, that's obviously a general verdict. The question is, what facts can you infer that he has found against the Commonwealth that you can subsequently apply when they try to bring other cases? And I think the point is, you've got to prove that that's the only possible issue. The only thing, as in Ash, that was the only possible issue before the jury.
Well, you talked about that collateral estoppel is a very strictly applied concept.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
If we go this route where the trial judge, the general district court judge, talks about what he found with regard, and I find no probable cause is his conclusion, and then he says, on the misdemeanor charges to whether or not you've proven the case beyond a reasonable doubt, I would find that you have not. I'm going to find him not guilty. Have we moved somewhere further in our jurisprudence that we were not?
I think we have, Your Honor, because you haven't established that the issue involved here that we're trying to preclude is in fact essential, necessary, the only possible way that district court could have ruled on this issue.
Suppose the judge had said, I find the defendant was in California at the time the crime occurred, and I find him not guilty on the misdemeanor. Would your argument be any different? Would that factual finding be any more persuasive that I find he wasn't the gunman?
No, Your Honor, because first of all, don't forget, the first thing the judge has to determine is, was there a crime committed? And I think that initial step is foreclosed by his own finding on the felony that this is a murder prosecution, that the Commonwealth has established the murder. And for those reasons, I request that the decision of the trial court be affirmed. Thank you,
Mr. Murphy. We'll try to get the clock right for you this time. I think you've got 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
May it please the court. I think lawyers and judges basically think that the jury verdict in cases basically is important, should be honored as a part of our jurisprudence. And we all, when we leave the courtroom, we may say, well, we don't like what the jury decided, but we respect it. And unfortunately, the choice by the Commonwealth attorney and the majority opinion cited Livingston, that you're supposed to be competent and know the law and know what you're doing. He made a wrong decision. And collateral estoppel does have a purpose in the law. And in here, I think the court has to decide, are you going to look at this statement by the general district court judge essentially in a vacuum, or are you going to look at the entire preliminary hearing, or you can look at what was argued, or you can look at what the evidence was, or you can look at the entire totality of the circumstances, and all of that leads to the inescapable conclusion that the general district court judge found that the defendant did not wield the weapon.
Except that he didn't say that with respect to the felons.
I don't, based on the cases cited in the majority, I think in the way the majority structured its opinion, it indicated, based on the case law cited there, that you could interpret it the way the majority opinion did, and I believe that is the correct one.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cosby. That concludes our docket for the day. We are adjourned.